This is the Primal King podcast, but first, a quick message.
Crosso Ranch has raised premium beef for 5 generations, but we've always kept it to ourselves, but not anymore. You now have the ability to get ranch-raised USDA certified beef from our mountains in Idaho delivered directly to your dinner table. Don't settle for growth hormones, steroids, or imported beef on the store shelves anymore. Go to crossomeats.com right now to place your order. Your body and your taste buds will thank you for it. Even our girls think it's really yummy.
Buy Crosso Meat. I love it.
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 75. All right, so super excited to introduce you to my guest today. He really is kind of the epitome of working hard, but also doing what you want to do, right? We're told about the things that we should do, and you should want to have this type of job, and you should want this type of career, but very few people will actually tell you to kind of follow your passion, and with a little hard work, I think you guys are going to see that that actually is possible. So again, super excited for this one today. All right, everybody, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name's Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Primal King Podcast. Super excited for my guest today. This is someone who has an awesome story, and I can't wait to share it with you all. He's actually someone who kind of worked his way up in the company. He's somebody that has a cool background. Just talking to him before we got started here, actually very similar in a lot of the views that we have. So I'm excited to dive into that as well. He is the host of the Kafaru Cast podcast. He's the president and CEO at Kafaru. Guys, I'm super, super excited to be able to welcome in today, Aaron Snyder. Again, Aaron, thanks for coming on.
No, I appreciate you. Appreciate you having me on. Like you said, from the few minutes we talked about, talk before the podcast, I think this will be an interesting conversation.
So. That's what we shoot for. So I kind of want to go back a little bit because I know that your story is crazy. Just looking at it, it looks like back in 2012, I think it was, you started working at Kafaru, and since then you've kind of worked your way up. But maybe even before that, came from a military background. Obviously, you work in the outdoor space now, and we'll get into all of that you guys do. But have you always kind of been outdoorsy? Did you grow up that way? I guess maybe kind of, yeah, take me back to what it was like when you were a little younger, what you were like.
Yeah, so I'm actually from a town called Detroit Lake, Oregon, which is like 200 people. It's in the middle of the Cascade Mountain Range. And yeah, there wasn't a lot of TV or Nintendo. So I was always outdoors. My dad hunted a little bit, enough obviously to where, as I got older, 13, 14, 15, we were going out on our own. The lake I lived on was, I think, 9 miles long, had 6 rivers going into it. So a lot of fishing and a lot of hunting. It's a logging community. So I actually got lucky enough to work on a trail crew team every summer for the Forest Service, where we'd go through the wilderness trails and clean them, which, you know, starting off work ethic wise, running a cross cut saw and a double bladed axe, but backpacking in with, you know, loppers and double and single cross cut saws or single bucks. It's hard work at 14 years old, you know, doing that, which I didn't know any better. So I didn't know it was hard work or what wasn't. It just was life. So I did that, and I learned a lot about backpacking and backpack hunting at a very young age, because same principle, we'd hike in with our gear. And then, you know, like I said, crosscut saws or hatchets, axes, and clean off the trail. So as I experienced going into that, part of it was the Pacific Crest Trail, that whole wilderness area in my region. I realized, not as much today, but back then you didn't see anyone. Like there was no one back there, which is right up my alley. So I did that, and then played sports. Did pretty good at that. Barely graduated high school, so I didn't really have a plan. I had some scholarships for football that I totally pissed away. And so I joined the Army as the shorter version. In the Army, I was a 12 Bravo. It's a combat engineer. I worked a lot with scouts, so just kind of furthered my knowledge for what I, you know, do in the outdoor industry now. I'd re-enlisted, so I was in for two, I think a 3 and a 4 year, a 4 and a 3. It's been, so it's, I'm 44. So it's been a while, but I was in from like 94, 5 time frame to 2001 time frame. I got out. I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do. I knew I didn't really want to be a cop or anything like that. It's just not my mentality. So a guy, I was working in an archery range, and a guy walked in that owned a commercial glass shop. They did curtain walls, high rises. He hired me right there. I worked on that. And, you know, I had a wife and a kid. And so I couldn't hunt all the time, and worked super hard at that. Got really good at that, where I could take a couple months off a year. I would take unpaid time off to hunt as much as I could. And I got a divorce. And when that happened, I kind of was like, you know, fuck it. I'm going to do whatever it takes to hunt all the time. Like, I'm going to find a way. And that was like up on a Therm-a-Rest air pad for like 3 years in an apartment just to save money to go hunting. And that's a no bullshit story. My parents, we didn't have any money when I was growing up. So there was about 2012, 11 time frame, somewhere in there. I came in here, maybe 13, whatever it was, to Kafaru, and met Patrick, the owner, and just started helping him out. And I thought, you know, I'm going to die regretting, you know, not taking the step to do what I'm really wanting to do with my life, right? Like, I really need to just say piss on it and at least make the effort to try to get into the outdoors more, like whatever that took, whether it was writing or guiding or whatever. I just wanted to be outside all the time. But worst case scenario, I fail, you know, come back to work construction again, I guess. And so the day I was going to quit construction, and keep in mind, I was making for a trade, you know, 100 and some thousand a year, good money. And I ripped my bicep off the day I was going to quit. And I was actually working in the office, went out to the field to help some guys, bicep ripped off. And I'm like, well, I guess I'm not quitting today, right? So had to go through physical therapy, workman's comp. So 4 months was about the time to get it all healed at the end of that time. And again, I'm speeding this whole story up a lot. The lady from Pinnacle Assurance called me. She's like, hey, you're going to get released next week. And I'm like, am I going to get any trouble if I don't go back? She said, no, you're good. Why? And I said, well, I don't want to go back. So you get money when you rip shit off or break fingers or whatever with workman's comp. I didn't even know that. Right. She's like, well, you do get money for this. And I was like, I do. I'm like, I'm healed though. Everything's good. And I'm like, wait, Aaron, shut up. They're going to give you money. Stop talking. You know? So I got money from that. I signed a waiver that said I'd never come back. I guess there's a lot of people that get injured that never really go back to work, and it's like an unending work comp thing. If you sign a waiver saying you won't do that, they give you another like grand. And I was like, yeah, I'll sign that. No problem. I sold some designs to some outdoor companies. I'm under an NDA for that, but to some outdoor companies, not Kafaru. So I had some money from that. So, you know, I had 40 or 50 grand to my name. And I thought, well, that's enough to help get by to do, you know, figure this out. And then shortly after that, Patrick kind of hired me sort of part-time commission based for helping him out. And now I'm really going to fast forward. I went from that to the CEO president to now the owner in 9 years, I guess, which is crazy because I barely graduated high school. I'm a good leader, so that helps. But, you know, it kind of proves staying after it and just work your ass off, things generally pan out for you if you do that. Try to stay optimistic.
Yeah, for sure. That's crazy. So you were actually going to quit your job. What were you going to do when you quit? Were you going to go and just kind of hang out in the mountains or?
Yeah, I don't know. I was like, well, I'll figure it out, right? I was like, I'll help out here, write articles, you know, maybe do seminars, teach survival classes. I'm like, a recent podcast I did, they asked the same question. I'm like, look, I'm not a planner. I fucking wing everything. I was going to wing it, right? I was like, I figured if I just worked hard and it would pan out, right? I would figure it out. And it's not like I was like, oh, I'm quitting this job to go to the next one. I didn't have one to go to. It was more like, I'll quit this and I'm just going to boots on the ground and start finding something, whether it could have been a wilderness guard working for the Forest Service. It could have been a guide. It could have been a photographer. It could have been anything. I just knew I needed to be you know, I wanted to be backpacking and in the outdoors as much as possible. I know that's a horrible plan, and I do not suggest to take that route for anyone, especially if you have four kids and a house and a boat and a car payment. Don't just quit one day. But I had figured I had enough money to where I was going to be okay.
It's funny because I actually had a very similar thing when I walked away from the software company I used to work for. Great job. You know, everybody that listens knows, but you know, well into the six figures. And it was like, I don't want to do this anymore. It's like, well, you know, my wife, like, well, what are you going to do? I don't know, but I just don't want to do that. Like, we'll figure it out, you know? And so, cause that's one of the things, right? A lot of people deal with is maybe they're doing something they don't want to do, but yet they're kind of like the golden handcuffs, right? They're making just enough to get by. They're not broke. They're not doing great. They're not fulfilled. Doesn't really matter because the bills are paid. Like what advice maybe would you give? Because obviously you've worked your way through this situation. Like what advice would you give to somebody who maybe is in that situation? It's like, you know what? I don't really want to do what I want to do, but I do have all this stuff. Like what would you tell someone in that situation?
Well, part of it, you said it there, the golden handcuffs means you have acquired some debt. And so you have to keep the handcuffs on. And that was one thing I was lucky with is I didn't have debt. In fact, fast forward till now, and I make really good money now and, you know, a lot of side gigs going on. I still don't have a credit card. Like we're buying a house and the broker finance guy is like, you don't have any credit. I'm like, yeah, but it's not bad. Not good either. I just live like a caveman. Not acquiring debt is a big part of it because when you have debt, then you have responsibilities, which not saying you don't work responsibilities, but not debt coming out your ass, right? Try to keep the debt down. Try to keep it to where you're not strapped constantly. Because if you talk to climbers, for example, you know, I just watched a special on, you know, Jimmy Chin is a photographer. Anyway, amazing guy. He was talking about, he sold a picture when he was younger. That was, he sold it for $500. He's like, I could live for 2 months off this. He drove a van around and climbed. Well, that doesn't happen in this day and age very often because there's the grass is greener than and the keeping up with the Joneses. So I strongly suggest for everyone to keep the debt low and then start focusing. If your passion is photography, find a way, right? Like when I say that, volunteer to help out a photographer, like find a way in, you know, if it's hunting, if you want to be a guide, find a way in, you know, and then again, with lower bills, you can get away with less money. If you need less money, you can get away with a less paying job and then work your way up. That's not exactly probably what you were asking, but that's usually what I suggest to people.
No, I think that's great because I think that that's why, you know, at least in my experience, why so many people struggle to make the big holy cow changes, right? Or to really pursue their dreams because they're like, yeah, maybe I really want to do that, but I do. I have the house, I have the car, I have all the credit cards, I have the student loans, I have blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I can't afford to, right? Whereas, I don't know. I think that it's key to, you know, try to keep your overhead low enough to where you can at least pursue what you want to do in life. I mean, if not, what the hell are we doing here?
Yeah. Even if it's, when I say that, like, even if it's a matter of, like I said, unpaid time off, you know, for me, like when you go in and they give you a raise, don't take the money. Take 2 weeks off extra vacation, right? If you're going to be, if your passion is the outdoors, you know, most places you're probably going to tap out at 4 weeks vacation, but generally get a week or two. Well, start making wheeling and dealing to take unpaid time off. That's how I did it to be able to hunt so much because I had to work, right? I had child support and a daughter, you know, that I try to spoil. So when, you know, I was figuring out finances, it didn't take a genius to figure out when I didn't have very many bills, this is what it takes me to live off for a month. I'm going to save that, you know, or double that. And then I'm going to go into my office and say, hey, I'm not going to work from September through November. I'll be back December 1st. If you're going to fire me, just tell me now and I'll go look when I get back. But I gotten good enough at that job where they always hired me back. Horrible advice probably for most people, but
oh, no, that's great stuff. And I think it comes back to kind of working, you know, working to live, right? I mean, because I talk to a lot of people who love the outdoors. In fact, me and my wife joked. So when we first moved back to the ranch, the house has fallen down basically. And So we're doing all of this remodeling. And one of the things that you probably know about living in a small town is that people, they want to be in the mountains. They want to be fishing, hunting, whatever it may be. And so we used to joke because one of the guys that was coming and working on our house that we'd kind of hired to do some of the work, he'd show up and he would have his fishing pole in the back of his truck every day. What great, right? But it was like 3 o'clock came around and we're living in squalor. Like the house is ripped apart. We've got our twin babies at the time, you know, older two kids running around in this. And it was like 3 o'clock on the dot, dude's gone and he's fishing every day. And we were just like part of it was like, are you serious? And then the other part of it's like, but that's kind of why we love living where we do, right? Because he's not working 12 hours a day. He's like, I'm going to go work and then I'm going to go fish because that's what I want to do. And so like, it was like frustrating, but at the same point, it was like, I kind of admire that. So obviously you kind of got to have the same type of lifestyle, but you go into Kefaru, you start working there. What was your job like? Were you already out backpacking, hunting, or were you kind of more in the factory side of it or in the production side of it? Or
done a lot of manual labor here, thank God. When I say that, I've helped put packs together, especially when we're busy. But my big thing, one of the things that probably intrigued Patrick about me was the 150, 200 nights a year in the wilderness. He knew that it was almost like a prerequisite or a requirement. I had to spend a minimum of 150 nights in the field testing gear. You know, you're perfecting your field craft. And so there were times where I'd be stressed out in the office and he would come in and make me go backpacking for a week. Like, hey, get out, go test this out, go fishing, go do whatever, go scouting. You don't find that in very many outdoor companies, where he literally was like, this company was built off people in the field. Get the fuck out of here now. Like it wasn't like an option. And I'm like, Patrick, I got things to do. And he's like, yeah, and they can wait, leave. And you don't see that very often. And so, you know, when it comes to design and the mentality of the company and everything else, it is very unique because that was instilled upon me here from the day I started helping out was you want to work hard. Obviously you want to make good products, but you need to go out and test those products to make sure they're good or you're selling a false dream, which the outdoor industry is plagued with that. And so he literally, like, we would come out with a frame and he would have me test it for 2 years before it would come to market. No one tests their stuff that long. And so that was kind of instilled on me early. And that's what I did was, you know, help out with the direction of the company, marketing, design and R&D. Those were the things I focused on.
Wow. So basically you had a job to where you got to go hike around, hunt, fish, test products for over or close to half of the year every year.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's dream job for a lot of people I know. So when you would do this though, what, like, just so everyone knows, like, what were you doing? Were you out there just trying to beat the hell out of your backpacks? And like, what was that like when you were actually, you know, quote unquote, working on this stuff?
Some of it was just going fishing and taking photos of the product in use. Some of it would be applicable. We'd go on a mountain goat hunt, kick the pack with the goat in the pack down the mountain to see what kind of abuse it would take, how long the shoulder straps would take to compress with heavy weight, different attachment points, newer buckles, see when they would fail. Because you design something in a building or in a lab, the grass is greener always in the lab. Everything looks better until you put it through a storm or high wind or heavy weight, or, you know, there's a long list of things. So sometimes I was just effing off, right? I was just fishing and or scouting. Other times I was doing real life, you know, testing. Recently we were testing something else, and so I just threw a full sheep in the pack to see if I could break it. Other times it may be, you know, 30, 40, 50 animals, what kind of long-term abuse packing out that many animals will have on it. And then if we need to tweak that design, if there's something wrong, does the foam compress? Is there a weak point in the stitching? It takes a long time to perfect that. And so I would go test it out and perfect it.
Wow. So just so everyone knows, like, where all have you been, like, continent wise, country wise, hunting? Cause I know you've been hunting everywhere. Like, do you even remember all the places?
Yeah, it's not too bad. Cause pretty much all of Canada, all of North America, Mexico, like Tiburon Island, the Baja, you know, areas like that, all of the different states, but I haven't traveled a whole lot internationally, you know, hunting. I can't afford it. And now that I can afford some, COVID is here. And so me going on a, oh, I don't know, a hunt for Marco Polo in Tajikistan is probably not in the cards right now. I have some buddies over there I could help guide, but the COVID thing has really thrown a monkey wrench in that over the last couple of years. So that will probably happen once COVID goes away, but pretty much everything in Canada, the US and Mexico is where I've, you know, been for the most part.
So obviously with part of your brand, you kind of have to be a hunting advocate. And I know that as we get more and more woke or whatever you want to call it, there's more and more attacks on hunting and kind of maybe that lifestyle altogether. How much do you balance kind of the experience of the hunt and maybe the reason behind why people do it with also kind of the product and everything that you do there?
Quite a bit. I mean, the way the world is turning right now is unique. People that had, you know, looked down upon me for hunting before COVID were asking to borrow meat from me after COVID because I have 5 deep freezers full, which I was like, well, you know, I don't get it. I don't have any problem with beef, right? I don't, you know, whether your animal dies from a stainless steel spike going in its noggin or I put an arrow through it, it really has to do with consumption. In a way with what you're doing, right? With the beef, the cattle, right? When it is hard to find high quality beef anymore, right? Most of it, there's a lot out there full of steroids and shit, and you're really putting bad things into your body. So whether you're eating free range grass fed beef or you're eating a wild elk, you know, you know it's sustainment, right? You're it's good quality protein or whatever. And so trying to get that across of like, look, what we do isn't, you know, blasting deer and taking a photo in the back of a truck holding a beer, right? Like we're backpacking in, trying to do the right thing, show people how to break it down, how to take care of the meat. And that definitely coincides with kind of the message we preach here.
Yep. Do you as a company, do you face a lot of backlash for hunting and stuff? Do you get the trolls, the haters, any of that really?
Not too bad. I think it's probably because of the direction. You see a lot of dumb, as I'm cussing like crazy, apologizing, some dumb things on social media where you've got dudes biting duck bills and kissing deer and weird things that are really looked down upon, you know, for us. You know, we just want you to go out, have fun, have an adventure, you know, put an animal on the ground, know how to take care of it, bring it back and eat it.
Yeah.
For me, I don't put as much thought into it as a lot of people because it's the way I was raised, right? I mean, it's, you go hunting, you shoot your animal, you come back and you eat it. And there's not a whole lot more than that. It's no different than if you were raised, you're hungry, you go to the grocery store, you buy a burger, you go eat it. They're both animals, right? Is one worth more than another? I mean, we're eating them, it's feeding us. So you can get in long drawn out debates over this stuff, which I try not to anymore because we do it the right way. When I would say we, the people here at Kafaru, we try to do everything as legally and ethically as possible and to convey the message of, hey, you know, this is our heritage, you know, from thousands of years. And if you choose to like it or dislike it, I get that, but don't bash it. Right. I mean, the only people really, I guess, if you were a true vegan, you got a little ground to stand on, but if you're double fisting Big Macs, even though that's about 1% fake beef, you're eating meat, right? You've just killed it with your checkbook. You know, I do it with an arrow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree. No, it's good stuff. So one of the things I want to get into too, because when you go from being out in the field all these days, kind of being the employee to transitioning into now the owner of this company, it would seem there's a lot of different skill sets that would, you know, I mean, if you're out by yourself in the middle of nowhere, taking awesome pictures and testing products, that's one thing. But when it comes to actually like managing vision, everything that's required of an actual, you know, owner of a company. How was that transition for you? Was it pretty easy? I know you said that you're a natural leader, but was that an easy transition or?
Yeah. I mean, I'd already been doing it, but to be totally honest, as far as direction, I'm good at that. As far as marketing, I'm really good at that. Taking photos and knowing how to show products the correct way. But I surrounded myself with really good people that do a hell of a lot more than I do. Frank, are you in here? Frank is the general manager. Frank handles the majority of everything. So Was it difficult? No, because I pawned everything off on everyone else. I just helped with the general direction of the company, the design, the marketing. These guys are the studs. Like they do really well. We had to do some, what'd you call it, Frank? Some restructuring, right? We had to get different people in different positions, which has been a blessing. But other than giving some advice and, hey, let's do this and maybe like in goal stuff, these guys are the ones that knocked it out of the park. It wasn't me. So it was an easy transition.
But when you go through that, because I think that's the best owners, right? The best leaders are the ones who delegate, who can kind of see the big vision and put the people in place to execute it. Has that always been you? Or
I am the world's worst micromanager. I'll just fire you if you suck. I'm not fucking around. Like if you can't do your job without my help, you're probably not going to work here very long. Cause I want people. And, Frank is a good example. Frank doesn't really need my help. And though, I don't know what Frank, once a month, you might ask my advice. Like Frank handles it fine, which is why Frank, you know, in the next few years, will probably take over in my position now, just like I did with Patrick. Is if you have people, you know, like you said, if you have people, you don't have to micromanage, and just occasionally a Monday morning meeting, give some guidance. Those are the people that I want working for me to build them up and get them to where they're standing on their own two feet. They're confident with everything they do. They run their department well. And then I just come in every now with maybe the general change in direction of the company or products. That part's easy, you know, finding good people, kind of like finding a spouse or a hunting partner. That part's hard.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's so important because a lot of people that are business owners micromanage, but the problem is that number one, does anybody really like to micromanage? I don't know. Maybe there are those people, but also you don't empower your employees to do stuff, right? The people who are working there want ownership in what the outcomes are. And so, I mean, it sounds like, at least with your company, I mean, it sounds like people at least have the opportunity to kind of be creative and, you know, I guess be able to help out in different ways without having you breathing down their throat all the time.
Frank, I would say I'm probably the world's worst micromanager, probably to a downside. Like I literally am like, hey, you're the artist. You know, you need to show me. I trust in you. Like I'm a fashion victim. That shirt looks great, right? Like a guy we hired recently, David DeAustin, is our kind of content creator, videographer, photographer. You know, I almost feel bad because he'll come and show me something. I'm like, David, it looks great, but you don't have to show me that, dude. You've got the green light. You're golden. Show it to Frank. But our people are good enough to where they don't, you know, now they know the outlook or the what we want in marketing, t-shirts, whatever it is, sales ads, that they don't, I don't even have to do anything other than send them some kick-ass photos from my trips out in the woods. So yeah, I have good people around.
So I kind of want to talk about that because, you know, you talk about growing up small town, you seem like a pretty down to earth guy, but then after we were kind of connected here, I was checking out a little bit of research on you. It's like, dang, you got 100,000 followers on Instagram. So from being kind of like the small town guy, you know, what are you doing there? How do you get to 100,000 followers on Instagram by taking pictures? Just
luck, because I don't hashtag or anything. Like bakers constantly give me crap about, let me take over your page. I'm like, no, it's how I want it. I don't hashtag. I don't write a thesis with every photo. If I write 10 words, I'm doing pretty good. I think one of the reasons why Kafaru's following as well as my own is very organic, is we don't do any of the stupid things. I feel they're stupid to raise your social media page with ghost likes or ghost followers. Like our followers are, now there's some haters in there too, but those followers are there for a reason. They know they're going to get an honest opinion. They're going to see cool photos. We talk a lot of shit. They're going to laugh. Same with our podcast. I'm not the best motivational speaker in the world. So I try to lead by example rather than quoting some shit The Rock said yesterday in the gym, which does no good. I try to convey the message of it's inside you, get it out on your own. If what I'm doing helps that, great. But I didn't, we didn't, all of our following is organic. And so if you would have, when I met my wife, which was in, we recently got married in 15, but, or excuse me, 17. I met her in 2007. I didn't have a phone. I didn't have a computer. I slept on an air mattress. I was at the gym or in the woods all the time. I hated people and I hated social media wasn't there, but I did not like public speaking. Fast forward, when we got back together, we're in Walmart. And some dude's like, dude, it's an honor to meet you, you know, whatever. And I'm on my phone and people are calling me for advice on marketing. And my wife has a foul mouth like myself. She turned at me and she goes, what, who the fuck are you? Like, what happened? And I was like, what do you mean? And she said, you lived in the woods when I met you. You didn't even have a phone. And I'm like, yeah, things have changed. You kind of adapt to survive. And so while I like helping people on social media or YouTube or whatever, if I had the choice, I wouldn't be on social media. I say that I like photography. I'd probably share some photos, but I mean, you know, overall I'm doing it to help people, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not me. I just try to make the best out of what I got. I'm in a good position.
What got you going with it then? Because I have buddies of mine still, they're like, I'll never get on Facebook. I'll never get on Instagram. Like, what takes someone who doesn't even have a phone, living on an air mat, sleeping on an air mattress, like what compels you to be like, you know what? Oh, the hell with it. I'm going to get on Instagram. Did you start liking it? Did you start, I don't know, like getting into it a little bit? Or
I got into it. I can't say that I really ever liked it a lot. Parts of it I like. You know, I like helping people, but you know, I'm good with marketing. I don't have a college degree in it, but I'm good at knowing what people want and conveying a message and not coming off like a sales pitch. Just evolution, right? You got to evolve. In knowing that there was that much free marketing out there, and getting a story out of a product and so on and so forth for basically no money, was a pretty easy decision. And so it was like, well, I better learn what I'm doing real quick, because I need to take advantage of these certain things, forums, Facebook, Instagram, things like that, to help, you know, obviously further the company. And so when you have a company that says, I don't like social media, I get that. Yeah, you know what, though? There's a lot of things I don't like. I like money, right? I like helping people. And I like employing 40-some people at the company. So I'm just going to have to take a sacrifice and just deal with social media. And so sometimes people get stuck on social media is bad. And there's some bad things about it. But if you make the best of it, try to convey the right message and help people along the way, it's a good thing. And that's what we try to do here.
Well, I think social media absolutely can be awful in some senses, right? I think that it can absolutely bring out the worst in people. But kind of like you said, it's also one of the only ways that you actually can do free marketing, you know? And yeah. So I see all these businesses, and I used to work with a lot when I was in my last job, to where if you're not on social media, you're costing yourself a ton of money, right? Especially in this day and age. So it's something you got to embrace. So I kind of want to transition a little bit though, because it was something we were talking about before we actually started recording here. And that is kind of the pride that you take in having everything being American made. A lot of people tout it. A lot of people, like you said, kind of wave the flag. And then the next thing you know that, you know, they're going in a complete different direction. Has that always been part of Kafaru? Has it always been kind of American made, or is that something maybe you took the company more in that direction? Or yeah, I guess maybe how did that kind of come about?
No, it's definitely something Patrick instilled in me that he was focused on from the beginning. And he wanted, even after the take, you know, we took over the company, the buyout, whatever, that, you know, I told him, I said, look, I'll do everything I can to, for as long as I can to keep everything here. When I say that, within reason, there's certain things that you can't get in the US, that, you know what I mean? But, you know, when I say that, meaning we're always going to say 90%+ made in America. You know, I think there's a dinner plate we get to make a stove that's from, well, not from America, right? So, I mean, there's certain small things, but I've seen some of our competitors that have partially put together in America with Asian components, and then they slap an American flag on it. That irritates me, because it doesn't deserve the American flag, so to speak. And I'm sure you deal with it in your, in the beef community, knowing as much as I've investigated that, you know, cause I quit eating, when I say red meat, I quit eating a lot of store-bought low dollar red meat a long time ago when I started to research it. Cause I'm like, there's so much shit pumped into this thing that, you know, so I started buying I get to hunt enough now, I never run out of meat, but I started buying the grass fed higher end, had less stomach problems. It's cleaner protein. You don't have steroids pumped into it. So you probably deal with the same thing, because then you're forced with conveying a message of what you're doing or what I'm doing without looking like a total douche, blasting your competitors, trying to get the right word out. And what I found is just everybody knows here, keep your head down. Don't focus on our competitors. Make yourself better. Make our product better. And if they want to go that route, so be it. But just do your best to make the company, our company or yours, as good as it possibly can be, and let that speak for itself.
Do you find it to be more difficult because of that? Because I mean, again, like kind of with the way that we have to do our beef, the way that it's raised, everything, it takes a little longer, it's a little more expensive. And so I know that we lose customers that way. There's part of me that's like, it's fine. They're not our people. I'm okay with that. There's the other part of me that's like, you know, maybe if other people were doing stuff the right way, it would be a little more of a level playing field. But again, it's like you said, you can't worry about what other people are doing. But do you think that maybe trying to stay American based, American focused, I guess, with the components, like, do you ever feel like it hurts you?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely hurts sales. Give you an example. We had a backpack that we sent the company to overseas as a basically a test, right? We sent it over to them and they priced it. Well, probably not the most honest thing in the world, but I was like, oh, okay. Well, it was significantly cheaper. So I said, can I see your BOM? What each part costs, right, to build that pack? Okay, can I see the labor? Okay, well, I saw the labor. I'm like, well, what do you pay your people, just out of curiosity, you know? It was disheartening knowing that there's people in that country making that low of an amount that Americans are taking advantage of. And I'm trying not to get too much on a high horse, but if you could build a backpack in Asia that's equivalent to ours in size for $37, and it costs $189 to make it here, meaning we pay our people accordingly. The buckles are 400% more. The webbing is a 400% increase. It's 1,000% increase on the material. It's more durable, longer lasting, more comfortable. Where I get a little bit knotted up as you watch social media, you see a guy pumping the American flag and going to make a change. I don't know, Civil War, all the crazy shit you see. And then he buys a pack made in Asia. I'm like, well, hey, man, you know, I'll message guys. I don't do this anymore. Like, hey, why'd you choose that pack? Well, it was cheaper. And I'm like, well, if it's, you know, it's cheaper, I get it. But what about the whole American patriot? You know, where'd that go? Like, what happened? And I think that falls to the wayside a lot. And that does kind of irritate me at times.
Well, I've always had this philosophy that if you really want to know who you are, look at your bank statements, right? It'll tell you all you need to know about yourself. It'll tell you all you need to know about anybody, what you spend money on, what, you know, what you place the value in. It's always going to tell you everything you need to know, because yeah, you can be draped in an American flag, but you know, buy everything that you own from Walmart that's all made in China, you know, it doesn't necessarily kind of line up on the ethical side, right?
Yeah. And I brought this up before. I'm talking on an Apple phone, right? I have a Mac in front of me. I do my best. You know, I can't hang on my high horse too much. I try to buy from not even necessarily American made, but non-sweatshop made, where Swarovski binoculars, they're expensive, but Europeans pay their people a lot. So same with here. So where I know people aren't being taken advantage of in the workforce, I look at that as well. And you know, I try to always spend, you know, American made whenever I can. I spend my money on that. You know, when I can't, I do dissect it. Is this person, or is this company has the same views that I have? Are they paying their people applicable, or is it a sweatshop? You know, I look at all those different things and make my decision off that. Again, where you get I get some people just can't afford things. I get that. But if you're, you know, drinking a case of beer a night and maybe not the healthiest lifestyle, you can make some lifestyle changes that would help you anyway, buy a better product, put more dollars in Americans' pockets. I focus on those things and try to get that point to other people as well.
So one of the challenges that I've had, you know, with our business and some of the swag and stuff that we do is it's hard to know where some of this stuff comes from. Like I was actually having a conversation with someone who manufactures, so for our Crosso Meats, our tumblers, the stainless steel ones. And they were telling me, like, you literally cannot make these in the US. Like, you just can't do them because the stainless steel is all in China or whatever. I don't know if that's true or not, but I was just like, that's insane to me that you literally don't even have a made in US option for this. Now, it might not say made in China quite as big, right? But it's like, how do you, maybe if you're trying to do it that way, like, how do you actually know what's made in America? What's like, which companies to buy from, if that in fact is something that you're serious about doing?
Yeah. And I mean, finding that out, you got to dig pretty deep sometimes. I will say, like, for example, our t-shirts, they're printed. Everything else is done here. The blanks are from overseas because we can't find good American made t-shirts.
Yeah, same here with our shirts. Yeah.
And we've gotten a little flack from that. And that's a very clear and pretty direct response is the moment I can find a good t-shirt made in America, that is the route we'll go. But we haven't been, everyone we've got is just doesn't fit correctly and everything else. So I'm like, we do our best, but the t-shirts, people like these better. And I do know they're built here in the US. So that makes me feel good. I'm helping employ a lot of people in this specific place in Utah. That's where we get our t-shirts from. And so making phone calls, there's a specific outdoor company that sells stoves to the outdoor industry that I was at the OR show 2 years in a row, kind of didn't beat them up, asked some questions and quickly learned they are definitely not pro hunting. They take money from hunters, but that does not mean they're pro hunting. That just means they like money. And I've tried to convey that and I'm amazed at how much blowback. Well, I called and talked to the customer service rep. She said they're pro hunting. And I'm like, well, I talked to the owner and I can tell you they're not pro hunting. Like doing a little research on your own goes a long way.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I want to talk to you real quick too, as we kind of start wrapping up here. The Cafaro Cast, what do you got going on for people who may want to check it out? What's that all about?
Everything. We interview all kinds of people. It's directed obviously towards the outdoors, but we could have a podiatrist or a chiropractor on 1 week. The next week we may have an outfitter and a guide. We may have a doctor on talking about altitude sickness. We may just be on there talking shit. Generally, we just try to make people laugh and learn along the way. We'll go into arrow tuning, rifle builds. I don't know how many episodes we're at. I think we're at like 6 million downloads on Podbean. So it's fairly popular. I think we've been at it for like 2.5-3 years. But you never know what's going to come out of a podcast from us just because it's a very military guys, right? Tomorrow we've got a special forces or Delta Force surgeon coming on to talk about safety in the wilderness and field craft, survival, self-sustainment. We talk about all kinds of stuff, man.
Nice. Nice. So you pretty much just all good outdoor stuff though, right?
Yeah. 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 It's one of those things where like, if we wanted to get you on and talk about beef, you know, and we would, I mean, you're more than welcome. We'll get you on and really break it down to where we don't have sponsors on the podcast. So we can say pretty much whatever we want. Well, when you're allowed to do that, you may hurt some feelings, but you also get to the truth a lot faster when you don't have sponsors, I've found, because you can say whatever you want, as long as it's truthful or maybe your version of the truth, meaning where you're coming from. We're all for it. And so when you start talking about grass-fed, high-grade beef and comparing it to the injected shit beef, we'll have you on there not to just tout that you sell it, but why it's better and break it down from top to bottom just as an informational thing because we care about what people are putting in their bodies. So,
yeah, no, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. So I want to start wrapping up here. Again, it's been a ton of fun, Aaron. I'm glad you came on. Kind of like I mentioned before, we like to kind of go through mindset. We like to, you know, again, the liberation lifestyle legacy side of it. So you've had this crazy life, you know, small town guy, just like I am, outdoorsy, everything else you've gone through. obviously you've kind of had this wild journey. I guess, I don't know, when you maybe look back, what do you feel like maybe you want the legacy that you're going to leave behind one of these days? Like, what do you want that legacy to be for yourself?
And I don't know. That's a tough one. I guess if I was going to give, people something to look at, is focus on lifestyle. Don't focus on money, focus on a better life and focus on hard work. One thing I've had trouble with is at times treating others the way you want to be treated, good or bad, right? Like, if you're good to everyone or as many people as you can be, you work on, hard work and work ethic, and focusing on a happy lifestyle rather than cars, trucks, and everything else, you're going to live a lot longer. And hopefully people can look at what I've done and see that does pay off. Like, you can start out with very little and make it off of hard work, determination, a good outlook, stay happy and focused and do fine in life. You don't need to be handed $1 million from your daddy to make it. You can do it on your own, and you'll be a better person for it. And hopefully when people look at me, they see that.
Do you look back kind of where you are now? Like, did you ever think you would be in a position like this when you're doing construction, when you're sleeping on the air mattress? Like, did you ever think that there would be a time where you would be business owner, boss, all of this stuff?
No. No, I didn't. And it's funny, Evan Hafer, Black Rifle.
Yeah, he's been on before, yep.
He asked me, he's like, so what was your goal? I was like, I didn't have a goal, dude. I wanted to do epic shit. That was my goal. I was like, I didn't have like this path set ahead of me. Like some kids that go, their parents, they got three choices, a doctor, a lawyer, or whatever, a banker. I don't know. I didn't, my focus was spending as much time on the outdoors as I could and doing as much cool things as I possibly could. That was my goal, which is horrible advice, but it's panned out for me. I didn't have this, yellow brick road in front of me of when to turn left and right. I just kind of winged it. It's panned out for me, which is horrible advice.
No, I mean, I honestly think sometimes that's the advice we need to take, right? Like, stop telling kids to go to college and get a degree that they don't even know what they're going to do. They don't have any clue what they're going to do in life. Yet you just tell them to go and get like $80,000 in debt so they can get an underwater basket weaving degree. So no, I get it. Last thing. What's that?
Oh, I just say, you think about it. I've been asked to speak, believe it or not, at high schools twice for the graduating class, which is crazy, right? I was not a good kid. And what was amazing is the principal the superintendent that talked to me about this. I met one of them while I was antelope hunting. We were just talking at dinner. They heard my story and they were like, would you speak at our graduating class? I was like, me? They were like, look, we need people to hear the hiccups you've had and where you're fully admitting, like, maybe you should have went to school for this, but you didn't really need this, and hard work paid off, but the hard work was good in this avenue. But rather than them hearing, go to college, because most of them aren't, and the ones that are may not know why. And then they've got $100,000+ in debt or more and don't really know what they're going to do, where, my thing is focus on what your passion is and find a way and you'll be happier. And then you're not working because you're doing what you want.
Well, and I wish more people would say that, especially people who are successful, maybe, because I did the same thing, right? Kind of like you were talking about football, and that's why I went. I ended up getting hurt and I never actually even played, but here I was in college, had no clue what I was going to do, but it was like, this is what I'm supposed to do. And then the next thing you know, it's like, pretty much flunking out of college, and I don't know what I'm going to do now because everyone just said to go to college. I didn't say what to do after that. Right. So, yeah. So no, I mean, I think it's great advice. Well, I want to go ahead and wrap it up here. If people want to follow you, support you, where can they find you at?
For me personally, it's, on like Instagram, it's Aaron, Aron _ Snyder, Snyder. Kifaru. So KIFARU International or Kifaru.net is the website. KifaruCast YouTube page. We got a bunch of tech tips on there. And then KifaruCast, the actual podcast. I'm on Facebook as well. I don't mess around on there as much, but it's Aron Snyder on Facebook.
Awesome. You guys definitely check out Kifaru. You got to go on, follow Aron on Instagram. He's got a ton of awesome photos there. And thanks again, Aron, for coming on, man. I really enjoyed our conversation.
No, I'm glad you had me on, and hopefully, at the very least, some people have a little focus and drive now to know that you can be a dumb knuckle dragger and still do okay. So,
hey, I think I've already proved that. I hope, right? Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. There's one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.